everyone. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is 2014, part one. So Madeline and I have been absolutely fucking terrified of getting to this point.
I don't want to do it.
it's a lot that we've undertaken to go through this. And we've been doing this podcast for like 2 years. And we still have not made it to 1989. And now it's finally here. And I am just bereft.
I know, I'm like foaming at the mouth to get to like the later part of 2016 and the early 2017 when she's not even there.
Our 2016 episode is going to be like a roundup of the news from that year.
Yeah.
Then Donald Trump got elected.
Yeah.
Wow, dark times. So I think we should maybe try and do like a little theme of the year. What do you think the theme of 2014 is?
Me? You're asking
me? Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. You, my co-host.
The theme of 2014. Well, lots of images are coming into my mind. I'm thinking about crop tops. I'm thinking about cutting hair. Crop, hair, cutting hair, crop top,
legs.
Legs, hair, short.
It's a rebirth.
Short, period. Yeah, it's a rebirth. Yes, that's okay. Yep. That's what I wanted to say. I went completely off topic with that. You were very eloquent and I just said legs, hair.
Well, you know what? It's not wrong. But this is a year where we get some pretty intense, I want to say, character development, although I can't really like say whether it was for the best or not. But you know, we get like some progression. She's really taking like some agency in her career and her life. And I have to say, living through it was one hell of a fucking time. It was really wild out here in 2014.
Yeah, it's so strange to think about like her cutting her hair being like such a big fucking moment, but it really was, because up until that point, she had literally never cut her hair. And it sounds stupid, but it's like when she put on red lipstick for the first time.
Everybody went fucking psycho.
She tends to like really brand herself, especially like back in the day. Like she had like such a solid brand.
For
everything that she did. So like wearing crop tops and like cutting her hair and like putting on red lipstick, it was like, who the fuck is this bitch?
This hussy.
Yeah, who's this that? Slut?
Where did she come from? I thought we were just, you know, having the best day in fucking Pennsylvania yesterday.
Yeah, she was a new bitch, like almost overnight, it feels like, even like looking back on it and being like, oh, it was kind of gradual. It still feels like it was like one second she was in her cowboy boots and the next second she was in her fucking crop top, you know?
The way that she tells it, I remember in an interview, she like told a story once where, I mean, and this is one of the like famous like Taylor lies, I feel. She was like, I woke up in the middle of the night and I just knew that I had to move to New York. I had to cut my hair short and I had to make a pop album. It's like, girl, did all of those things really come to you at the same time in like one clear thought in the middle of the night?
Nobody, that I feel like epiphanies like that never happen.
They don't. Exactly.
They just don't happen that way at all.
But Taylor absolutely does have main character syndrome. So I could see her like kind of organizing her life like that. Like, what's the next moment for me as a protagonist? Where do I go from here?
If you think about when it's so deeply entrenched in your career too, even something as stupid as cutting your hair, like being such a big part of like your career move, I guess I could kind of see that now that you mention it, especially for her, because she is so, dare I say, calculated.
I mean, she is. And you know what? We've come to accept it. And that's part of what I love about her. So if we ever call her calculating, it is not a diss. It is pure admiration.
Not from us. No.
But this year, I don't know. It was just like watching like a real fucking professional human being. And I think where the trouble kind of started brewing this year was when she really was conflating all her personal decisions with her career. It was like every little thing in her life was an opportunity, like rife to be exploited for being a pop star.
Oh, yeah. Oh, her friendships, her relationship,
her hair, her outfits,
everything that
her
she
fucking
did.
Apartment, which was a set, basically. The door to her apartment was a set for every day of her life.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about overexposed. Talk about overexposed. So I guess for our listeners, we can get into exactly how all of this came to be. So in January of 2014, we start with getting some great candids. So she's kind of letting her bangs grow out a little. We're getting like a side bang action. And they're a little feathered too. And I just think that these are like the greatest candids of all time. She's like going between LA and New York. She's chilling. She's going to dance studios every day, which we were too stupid to pick up on at the time. But obviously she was like rehearsing for something that involved dancing. Had we known that in 2014, we would have lost our minds.
At the time, we were like, she's not fucking dancing. She doesn't know how to fucking dance.
This bitch can't like walk in a straight line. She's not.
Yeah.
She's not going to be dancing.
Absolutely no clue what she thought she was doing at the dance studio. No clue whatsoever. I thought it was bizarre at the time.
I just thought she was going to work out or something like that. But then you look at her and she's in these ballerina outfits. Like, it was so clear. She was wearing fucking leotard.
Yeah.
So there's like a cute, and also I think in the first like quarter of this year, she was really saying goodbye to country music. So she was like doing her final like sweep of the awards as a country artist. There is a cute video of the ACM nominations. It's like a little skit. Much as I hate her skits, I kind of like this one because Meredith is in it and Scott Borchetta calls her. She looks very chic in her black turtleneck, but now it's cursed when we look back on it. So on January 14th, she attends the Golden Globes. Now, I don't know about you, Madeline, but I fucking hate this dress.
I know, I was surprised.
Shapeless black and pink bonanza. Her hair is pinned up. I think she was focus grouping the haircut there. And she attends with Austin, who is finally exiting his ugly duckling stage. This is when the Swifties started to like thirst over him.
Yeah.
disgusting.
Yeah. Yes, very interesting indeed. I never really got the appeal because to me, he really does just kind of look like a male Taylor.
But what did you think of the dress, Madeline?
I don't think it's one of her best looks, but I'm not like a hater or anything because I kind of remember liking it at the time. Looking at it now, I'm like, it's okay. But she looks good. Like, she looks cute, I guess, you know. No strong feeling towards it whatsoever. The crochet dress that she wore to the after party, I could take that one or leave it. That one, I don't know if it really like looked that good on her. It was like weird to me. But yeah.
I think her red carpet choices this year are really off, but her candids, she's like serving looks. So I'm kind of like, who styles you for what? And why are they so strange?
That's a really good question, actually, because I feel like she was like in between. If you think about it, like,
it was a growing red pain. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like she went from sincerely wearing fucking grandma dresses in the red era to all of a sudden wearing like very hip, very of the moment outfits. And I really think there was like a time when she was like figuring that out, like an in-between period of like, what should I wear on? You know what I mean?
So let me just use the Golden Globes to try something out. But unfortunately, it lives on in history. So that is that's where she loses for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of losing, she was nominated for Sweeter Than Fiction, which she lost. And you know what? I ain't mad about that. I don't think she deserved it.
No, neither do I. I mean, it wasn't. Was it? Is it amazing? Is it an award-winning track? No. Even if you like it, it's not like it doesn't. No. That's what I have to say about that.
It doesn't deserve any awards, let's just say.
No, let's just say.
Also, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are hosting again this year.
Oh, and was that moment?
Yes.
No, was that last year?
They repeat it. They do a repeat. Oh. So last year they said Taylor, they did. Okay, so if you didn't listen to 2013, Amy and Tina were hosting and they made some comment about Taylor and she told them that there was a special place in hell for them. So when they were hosting this year, Tina Fey says to Amy Poehler, "Amy, I love you. And there's a special place in hell for you," which I have to say is really funny.
Yeah, they got her.
They got her. They got her and she deserved it too.
And she deserved it.
For being such a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, it's just fucking freak. Really, no criticism whatsoever can be handled.
No, really.
Any sense not normality.
Not interested in having, and it was a joke too. We've been through that, but
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a photo of Jared Leto whispering in her ear, which is very scary because Jared Leto is, I'm pretty sure, a cult leader.
Yeah, or of some sort, at least. Yeah. a fucking bizarro snake man.
Yeah, that's so we it. Should. Yeah. I mean, she has a particular taste for bizarro snake men, so I guess. Yeah. And she also goes to the Weinstein Company after party. Let me tell you, there was a lot of fucking Weinstein action in 2013 and 14, like much more than I had ever remembered. And she has successfully dodged public recollections of that, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, who else was at these parties? You know what I mean?
Everyone.
So many fucking people were going to these fucking parties. Everybody was up that guy's fucking asshole. So I feel like she, you know, if they did bring it up, I feel like everyone would just be like, yeah, well, so did your fucking fave too.
Also, she hangs out with Jennifer Lawrence this evening, which I think is interesting because Taylor was definitely on her I am on a one-woman mission to be a cool girl, it girl, and God help anyone that gets in my way. And Jennifer Lawrence was kind of the cool girl at the moment. So she was doing her strategic alliances already.
It's also really interesting that her and Jennifer Lawrence were never actually like friends beyond seeing each other at shows and being like, hey, hello. Because I mean, that's such a type of person that she would normally like be like, for example, Emma Stone. To me, yeah. Emma Stone and Jennifer Lawrence have very similar personality types. I think that Emma Stone is kind of a bit more... I like Jennifer Lawrence, but Emma Stone is kind of less annoying. Yes. You know what I mean?
Well, Emma Stone is like Red Taylor and Jennifer Lawrence is like 1989 Taylor. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's exactly.
And she was in that in-between phase, so she had no idea which way to blow.
Very true.
So after the Golden Globes, we get some more amazing candids. Now, here comes my favorite candid of all time. She's wearing a black blazer. She's at Whole Foods, of all places, to serve a look. Whole Foods. Just picking up some potato salad. And she just looks fucking snatched. I don't know how to describe it. I see this on the TL all the time. It's the bangs. It's the, like, business bitch attire. She goes antique shopping. Oh, my God.
There is, in those pictures, in her tights, there's a hair scrunchie.
Really? That's, I forgot that.
Yeah, that is those candidates. She has a hair tie in her tights. Another one that's really good that's from the same sort of area is that one where she's walking up the steps and she's in her blue shirt and she's doing the arm bag thing and she looks over her shoulder and the wind catches her at just the right
yeah.
time.
Oh yeah. That, oh yeah. Oh baby.
That's like one of the best. Oh, that's one of the best candidates of all time. You're totally right. This era, this right before the 1989 haircut is like the best time.
It's like modern, but it's also like referential to like the 70s. It just suits her really well. I wish she would return to this hairstyle, but like she never fucking gives us what we want. So not gonna happen.
No. Never once. I don't know what the fuck she's doing with her hair right now. Speaking of, if we're gonna go down this road. I don't want to talk. I don't know what she's thinking with the bangs that are curled. She looks like a poodle. Can we have this conversation?
It's not good for her. I will say the recent appearance she did at the Brits, it looked better than it had. She like found a hairbrush somewhere because for quarantine, I'm pretty sure she did not brush her fucking hair. Ah. Anyway, back to the January of this year. So on the 24th, she posts a very cryptic Instagram photo that sent us into a fucking feeding frenzy of her playing the piano with a 13 on it, saying she's like rehearsing for the Grammys. And we all know that she was going to play All Too Well. And, you know, for all the listeners who were not around back then, All Too Well at this point had not yet become the fucking song. It was still like the fan song. We were the only ones who were like really paying attention to it. Didn't get a video, didn't get the single treatment. And this was pre the Grammy performance. So we were fucking excited when we found out she was going to play All Too Well. Cause usually like when she performs, she gets up and does whatever fucking single is out at the time. Usually like, you know, 22, I Knew Your Trouble. But this time she was like, I've been listening to you. I hear what you want. It's kind of the like seed of her listening to the fans and like stalking people on the internet. But yeah, I just remember being very, very fucking excited about her playing All Too Well at the Grammys.
There was never a time where she played, except for when she would randomly play like You're Not Sorry.
Yeah, the old days.
Yeah, back in the old days.
BC.
It's just so fucking weird. It's still to this day, I'm kind of like, did she really do that?
For us? It's, question mark? It,
for
little
for
old us? Me?
For me? Could it be? Yeah, it was definitely a fucking moment in time.
We were very excited.
We were lit up.
So then January 26th, the fateful hallowed event that would change the course of history forever. She still fucking references this night as one of the worst nights of her life, which is extremely dramatic because she has since won like 3 Grammys. But she's nominated for Album of the Year for Red. She's also nominated for Country Album, Country Song for Begin Again, and Country Duo for Highway Don't Care. All the pundits were saying, sweep, sweep, sweep. She's going to get all her awards. Well, she lost them all. Every single award lost. Where do we start? Let's start with the gown. Oscar de la Renta, chainmail dress. She has her hair up
beautiful
in a dress. Pony.
Great gown, beautiful gown. Great gown, beautiful gown.
The most beautiful gown. She was ready to accept her awards.
She was.
I was kind of mad she didn't wear red, but she looked so good that I'll forgive her.
Yeah, she served cunt all night long. Call it what it is. She showed up in a beautiful gown. She put on another beautiful gown to perform best songs from the record. Dare I say, a Grammy-winning song. The next thing you know,
fucking loses it all.
It's a failure. Yeah.
I mean, okay, so looking at the awards... Okay, country album, we get it. Everybody was like talking shit about how she was a pop star now. She wasn't a country artist. Fine. I think Begin Again should have won country song that year. That's my
onion. I definitely agree with that. I mean, my onion, I definitely agree because that fucking song is good as hell.
Exactly. It is a good song.
Offhand, do you have the intel on who did win best country song that night?
Let me see. I think it was probably some little big town shit. It was Glenn Campbell and Julian Raymond with I'm Not Gonna Miss You. Has anyone heard that fucking song? Who?
I literally don't know what that is.
I have
I'm
never.
I'm not even joking. I'm
and
not,
you know what?
I don't know what that is.
I've never heard it, but I'll tell you this. It's not better than Begin Again.
No, there's no fucking way. To me, it was looking back on it, it's like, I don't know if Red should have won Album of the Year, but all of her awards lost. It's almost like the Grammys was like, no. We've given you too much, little girl.
I can kind of see why she took this so personally. It was kind of like having the only institution that she cares about tell her that she wasn't good. Like, I don't agree with that, her analysis of the situation, but I understand why she had that takeaway from it.
Yeah, me too, because I could definitely see her getting in her head, like, what could the possible reason be for me to lose every single award other than
this is not good.
Personal, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I get it too. I mean, did she snap in her brain?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said, this is the night that she turns into a cyborg. Like, this is the time when she becomes a robot.
Something went into her head and installed software. I mean, seriously.
And that software said, I will be the most famous pop star in the world, and you will hear so much about me, you will have no choice.
You will have no choice but to serve me my award on a silver platter.
That I deserve.
Yeah.
But she did. She does. I honestly thought that, like, Red did deserve Album of the Year. Obviously, I'm going to fucking say that. But Random Access Memories, I mean, I don't know. I'm not like a music head, so I'm sure it was a great album, whatever. But watching her when they kind of dragged out the R, they went Random Access Memories, and you can literally see her.
That was rough. That was rough.
Deflate for like 0.2 seconds, and then she puts on her party girl face and she starts clapping and laughing. But you know that shit hurt her.
That entire, I couldn't even like watch the gifs of it that were coming out, because it's like it is literally a feature length film to watch her and her camp freak out thinking they're about to win the Grammy, realization that they did not win the Grammy, into pretending to be happy for somebody else.
I mean,
it was humiliating.
And her team continues to look sad, and Taylor is like trying to make them look happy. She's like smiling at them, being like, it's okay, clap, clap, clap.
So fucking embarrassing. Like, humiliating. And so that's definitely another moment where I totally get why it was one of the worst nights of her life, because that was embarrassing as hell. Deeply embarrassing. I mean, and everybody saw it, like millions and millions of people all around the world, and everybody made fun of it. So.
It just sucks because, as we said, she wore 2 beautiful gowns, and now we can talk about it. Her performance of All Too Well, which was incredible. I think to date, probably her best televised performance. Like, really just, it seemed like she wasn't that nervous. She forgot that the audience was there. I mean, the face she was serving to the camera, her makeup looked amazing. I also never thought that the headbanging was weird, but like a bunch of articles came out the next day being like, Taylor Swift looks possessed at the Grammys.
We were fucking used to it at that point. She performed that song every night on tour doing the exact same shit. And we said, woo.
Yeah, demon from hell yeah. Banging her head.
Yeah, that's what we want to see. This is for us, not you, pundits.
Exactly. Everyone else look away. This is a private moment.
Yeah.
And the piano had like a little spinning clock in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're bringing all my memories back to this performance. What I remember most is when she looked into the camera. I actually just retweeted this GIF the other day. It's
Well, I saw it scared me.
It's she was so intense in her face. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. I mean, she was totally, fully fucking serving.
I think she was already pissed off by that point in the night because she'd lost everything up until Album of the Year, which I think she still thought she might win. So the depression hour was real.
Yeah.
I mean, the Grammys, the fateful night, took her a few days to recover. But in February, she's back on her bullshit. She is in London and Germany finishing the Red Tour, which I think I wrote in the notes, world tour my ass. She literally went to London, Berlin, and nowhere else, essentially. So she brings out a couple special guests at this moment. Sam Smith, Emily Sandy, Ellie Goulding, and Ed Sheeran. She does a cute little version of Icy Fire with Ed Sheeran. And most importantly, on this trip, she records Clean with Imogen Heap. So we can guess that the album was pretty much done, because I remember her saying something like Clean was the last kind of piece to the puzzle of 1989. So by February, and the album doesn't come out until October, she was fucking finished.
Huh. I don't think I ever knew that. That is a long fucking time to sit on that record. Mm-hmm. Why did she have to wait? It was because she was on the schedule, I guess.
Yeah, she had other shit to do, including a fucking
movie. Yeah, she had a ton of other shit, and she like always did a fall release.
But on February 12th, the last day of the Red Tour, she cuts her damn hair. And it is the weirdest event of all time, a metaphorical shedding of skin, because she documents it all over fucking Instagram. Not just her, every dancer, every member of her band, celebrities come to watch her. She's literally like sitting in the middle of the room and everybody's looking at her, getting her hair shorn like a sheep.
This is probably the most over-the-top thing that I think, one of, that she's ever done. For such a stupid fucking thing. This was a moment when I was like, sometimes I really think that this bitch just is fucking obsessed with herself. Sometimes I really think that. Which, I mean, she had a party for getting her hair cut. So.
I will say, when I saw this, I about lost my damn mind. I really did. The thought never even crossed my mind that she would cut her hair. It was like as preposterous as her dyeing her hair blue. You know, like I just never expected that she would do that. And I hated it at first because she cut it too short and she had a little bit of a coconut head phase. And I was just not used to it. What did you think of this?
I hated it at first too. I think that for a long time, I thought that her like curly, like, and I hated the red hair too. See, I just fucking hated everything that she did for a while that wasn't her iconic big curly hair.
That ship sailed.
Yeah, the ship is gone. It has never been back. Not since the red era. It's just
it
gone.
Left the fucking port and said goodbye.
Yeah, I definitely didn't like it. I never like, even when like, if my friends in real life had long hair and they cut it, I would hate it. I'd be like, I what are you doing? Why would you do that to yourself?
It just takes some time to get used to.
Exactly. It's like, I don't know. I just think that I just didn't like it. I don't know what else to say.
But it's a moment. All the magazines pick up on it. Like, to be fair, it's not just her that thinks it's the biggest fucking deal in the world. Everybody else does too.
Yes. To be fair. Because we all made it that way.
It's a demon of our own construction.
Yeah.
So at the end of February, she goes to Malibu next to you. The sky is so blue with Lorde. And we can assume that this is when she played her style for the first time, because that day, Lorde tweets when that chorus hits. Yep. And Lorde told that whole story about being in the car with her when she heard style for the first time.
And it parallels my own experience hearing style for the first time.
You almost drove off the damn road.
I almost drove off the road.
Okay, so in March, we are getting more award show appearance. She goes to the Vanity Fair Oscar party. And this is one of my favorite red carpet looks. Stunning. It's not even a great gown. It's an astounding gown. It is a fitted, bejeweled, black, floor-length gown with slits in the arms. Mm-hmm. Very similar. Mm-hmm. It's like very bodycon tight, quite similar to the silhouettes she goes on to prefer for the 1989 tour. And she hangs out with Gigi Hadid and the one and only crook who got caught, Karlie Kloss.
I also really love that dress. It was such a, even looking at it now, it's like, it's such a, like, very adult, like, very, like, sexy
sleek
sort of a look. She looked really, really good.
She looked slinky.
Yeah, I mean? Slinky. Yeah.
She was slinking around.
She was.
But we love this moment for her. And this is really, like, you know, public image renegotiation. She's introducing us to the idea that she's all grown up. She's going to move to New York. But this is apparently the time when her relationship with Selena Gomez is strained. There's a lot of press about how they ain't talking. They're not speaking because of her relationship with Justin Bieber. And you know what? I believe it.
Do you remember our conversation about when we were talking about it, and we were talking about how Taylor doesn't like to be, like, told that she kind of likes to have, like, yes people around her, like, mm-hmm. not people who are gonna say she's being stupid or she's doing something wrong. Well, then I was reflecting on, do you remember in her, I'm going all over the place, in her Evermore interview with Zane Lowe, when she was talking about, like, oh, if your friend is dating some dumbass, you just have to stick by them and, like, all this other stuff. Or is that, that's what she said?
Yep,
right?
Yep. So I think Taylor got mad because she said, you know what, Selena, this shit is bad for you. And Selena said, actually, I'm going to do what I want. And Taylor said, that's outrageous.
She's like, oh, what? You're not going to listen to me? But I'm your friend. And that's more important than anything. Selena was like, well, the heart wants what it wants.
Selena literally was like, the heart wants what it wants.
Yeah. But hold on. Because they weren't speaking. But then do you remember, when did the heart wants what it wants come out? Because I know that.
Later this year.
So when Justin and Selena are together, Justin and Selena are apart, all of a sudden they're friends again. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is cuckoo bananas.
This is not a solid friendship to me. If I'm, like, thinking about it and, like, put it in this perspective, like, Justin Bieber was ruining your guys' relationship. I mean, he was kind of ruining Selena's entire life, one could argue. But, mm-hmm. like, I mean, you can't weather that particular storm.
I know. I mean, I think it says more about Taylor than it does about Selena, to be honest. I mean, she was kind of punishing her for not taking her advice, which I feel is not a good friend thing to do.
Oh, no, not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. That's crazy talk. You know what? And I'm going to come out and say it. There's a fucking crazy bitch in my life who's always dating the wrong fucking person. Do you think I'm getting in her fucking face saying that she needs to stop or else we're going to stop talking? No,
that's not what you do, baby. You got a friend. You got to stick with them.
You are a friend. That means you got to be there. You know, put your opinion in, but if they react negatively, be like, fuck, man. Okay, well, I guess I'll just wait it out.
Exactly. That's what you do.
Anyway.
And I think this was a point as well when I don't think Taylor realized, like, how important it was to have good close friends that you maintain relationships with, because she was kind of collecting friends like pebbles at this point, and just, like, picking, like, the biggest, shiniest, like, nice one. So I think she learned that lesson, but I think during this kind of period of time she was not ready to you know, really accept true friendship into her life, which is completely signified by her absolute mistake of a relationship with Karlie Kloss. This month we also get probably the most important narrative shift in her career. She moves to New York City, baby. And boy, do we hear about New York, New York.
Boy, do we hear about
it. Boy, do we hear about it.
A really good way to put it. She treated it like it was
a movie set, and she was the main character filming every day.
She did every fucking day. Mm-hmm. She was out there, arm out, bag on.
Cat in arm, walking around.
Yeah, doing her shit all the time, which, like, good for her. She was having fun. But she, I mean, New York, New York, New York. I love New York, New York, New York, New York. It's like, man, how did you not know that you were going to get sick of that shit real quick?
You know what? This was this was like her biggest achievement, but also her biggest mistake. Because I don't know in whose mind, for a regular 25-year-old girl who like wants a change in pace, yes, move to New York. You'll have the greatest time ever. If you're Taylor Swift and like you are pursued relentlessly by the paparazzi, New York is really not a good place to live. Like you can't fucking hide in New York City.
No,
you are.
No, there's nowhere
you
to go.
Can't. There are no back doors to go into restaurants. You got to go in the front door and you got to pass all the paparazzi. But I suppose that was part of the game plan. She just didn't really think ahead to when she might not want that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what I said in the last episode, or I don't know if I said this, quote unquote, on air, or if I said it privately to you off air, but we were talking about, like, there was a time when, like, Britney Spears, where she really enjoyed the paparazzi interaction, mm-hmm. because it gave her something, and then when it started giving her too much, or maybe even, like, taking stuff away, it was like immediate, like, I don't want it anymore.
But you can't turn it on or off.
You can't turn it on and off like that. Yeah.
At this point it's very much on and she really likes it. And this is where mm-hmm. our really iconic period of time of daily candids starts to happen. This is the beginning of her like dangerous overexposure, because if you go back through the archives, I'm not kidding. Every day, sometimes twice or three times a day, whenever she has an outfit change, she is photographed leaving her apartment, going to a restaurant, going to Sephora, going like to Whole Foods, going wherever she goes. Like she literally is photographed every minute of the day.
If you're thinking to yourself like, oh shoot, I'm thinking about this one specific outfit that she wore one day in New York in 2014, have fucking fun. Have fun trying to find it. Because unless you have it completely memorized what day it was, you're going to be searching through file after file after file after file. I've done it before. It's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. It really and it's not is. Worth it at the end of it, you know? It's just, no, like
just a too fucking much picture of her. And it's all the same. Oh, in this one, she's got a green bag. In this one, she's got a red one. Oh, this one, she's got a crop top. This one, she's wearing a dress. Whoa. It's the same.
And people start to gather outside her house. Which is something that I did. won't talk about that now. We'll get into that later. people start to literally just wait around outside her house to see if she's going to make an appearance. And you know what? If you waited long enough, she fucking
you'd see
did.
Her.
Yep, you'd see her. Walk out multiple times.
She was out and a fucking bout, which is so weird to think about now because, I mean, obviously, I don't know currently if she goes out quite a bit in London or not. I would assume that she does. And I would also assume that she's wearing a wig when she does. But like, this is the time when I feel like she was going out quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like
every day.
Every fucking day. This was not, she's never done this since or before. Every fucking day.
This is when her security really starts to beef up. Like she has a lot, she has like a couple cars following her and she has many security guards. And I believe that the New York house was a source of a lot of stalker incidents. So.
Well, because everybody knows where that house was. But yeah.
March 2014 was when it was fun. And then after that, it was not.
Yeah. No.
It was a liability for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then in March, she announces that the Red Tour will be coming to Asia. I lost it. For all of you that don't know, I am in Singapore. So I really was, you know, having a good time when I found that out. And before she comes to Singapore to grace us with her presence, she goes on the infamous road trip to Big Sur with Karlie Kloss.
Yeah, these pictures are sort of burned into my mind. Mm-hmm. And I don't really understand why. I guess because this was kind of like the start of like what would ultimately go on to become a very significant friendship in the life and times of Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Or if they were just everywhere again and again and again sharing the pictures. And at the time, this friendship with Karlie Kloss was like a big deal because they were literally twins.
Yes, I was going to say this. I think these pictures stand out to us because Taylor started to adopt Karlie's style of like model off duty looks. So it was like turtlenecks, black turtlenecks, like skinny jeans and like black boots. that was like her kind of like, when I'm not trying to serve a look, my go-to outfit. And then they kind of dressed in tandem. It was so bizarre.
The whole thing. I mean, they had the same hair. Mm-hmm. They had both had blue eyes. They're both really tall and skinny. They're both, you know, even though Taylor wasn't literally a model, she was almost technically one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just looking back on it now, it's like, like, it's just like creepy.
Well, she was probably getting more modeling work than Karlie Kloss was every single day of her life, you know, popping out of her house, getting photographed.
By far.
Yeah, and this is really when Taylor started to catapult Karlie Kloss to fame, because who the fuck had heard of her pre-Taylor Swift? Nobody. And who talks about her post-Taylor Swift?
Only Swifties.
So in April, she is, you know, being a rich it girl with Karlie. They're going everywhere together. She's going to her house. They're hanging out. And on the 1st of April, Taylor posts this very mysterious picture of her looking coyly at the camera from the sea, from behind. She's like little turnaround over the shoulder moment. And the caption is, for whatever we lose, a you or a me, it's always ourselves we find in the sea. And this, I think, was definitely an Easter egg of some sort. She was like hinting to us that there was something really fucking big coming on the horizon. And we lost it when she posted this photo.
Yeah. Oh, it was a big deal. It was a big, fatty deal.
It also, because it had cinematic parallels with the Red photo of her like standing in the forest, like one day before Red, you know?
Yes, very true. Yep.
So we were like, what can we deduce from this? We hadn't started speculating yet, but we were like, we were putting the pieces together.
Well, this was back in the day when it wasn't a fact that every single thing she said or did was, quote unquote, a clue of some kind.
Exactly.
Because she was always around, so it wasn't possible for everything she did to be an Easter egg. Also, we didn't even have the term Easter egg yet because she hadn't made it a thing yet. She did hint to stuff, but we never knew until after the fact.
Exactly. You know, and that's when it was really fucking fun. You know, these were the days when we ourselves drew the lines. She didn't interfere and she didn't try and guide the process. It was only when she realized that it was a very good marketing tool that, you know, the current hullabaloo and Luwaba Orchard came about.
Yeah, very true. And honestly, I would love to go back to the days where a picture could simply be a picture.
Nope, Madeline, those days are long gone. They are
literally, and they're never coming back, ever.
She continues her country music awards circuit by going to the ACM Awards. She wears, this is one of her best looks, I think, of this year. She wears a black and white two-piece dress with like a little bit of tummy showing. It's very cute. Mm-hmm. She has her hair in like soft waves. She presents an award. She was nominated for Entertainer of the Year and Female Vocalist, but she loses both of those awards, which, you know, was yet another kick in the ass to leave country music.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously it wasn't clear at that moment that she was fully leaving country music, but maybe this was the moment where she said, yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah, she was like, thanks guys, you clearly don't want me here anymore. I'm also too big for you, so I have bigger fish to fry.
Mm-hmm. And that is, honestly, this is definitely like one of the looks that I associate the most with the 1989 era, even though like the album hadn't even come out yet. This one to me is like, it sticks out in my mind because it's just a fucking surf.
Yeah, her hair, so good.
Her hair in particular, like this is one of her best, like it's just like big and it looks really good and her eye makeup looks really good. She's looking good.
She was literally a clothing rack this year. And this was one of the better moments from that.
Yep.
So on April 12th, she makes a brief appearance on SNL. And this is when the cool girl, casual girl, detached girl rebrand really kind of ramps up. So Seth Rogen has this monologue and he's like talking about like guys and girls, I don't know, something like that. And she says, whenever a man shows emotion, I appear. So as we can see, she's already kind of redirecting the narrative of the boy crazy thing. And she's finally having a sense of humor about herself instead of feeling like personally slighted a la Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
It's weird because that fucking Seth Rogen thing feels like it was yesterday. I was just like, that was in 2014?
Mm-hmm.
Feels like it was so recent.
I know. And we kind of lost it as well, because at this point she was becoming more visible outside of like professional engagements. Like the SNL thing really was like a fun thing she decided to do. I think she also went to like an Ingrid Michaelson concert around this time with Karlie Kloss. And we were like, okay, something's happening here, but like not sure what it is, but like, please keep going, ma'am. She was out and about, as we said, this year. And we got some candidates of her going to dinner with Haley from Modern Family. I unfortunately don't know her name. So, Sarah Hyland.
Yeah, Sarah Hyland.
There we go. There it is. And Karlie Kloss. And what we can see here is the beginning of the hashtag girl squad, a very interesting phenomena that will explode in probably our next episode.
It's interesting to me that Sarah Hyland was ever part of the girl squad, because she really didn't get anything from that. And she's really not that famous.
Madeline, anyone could be part of the girl squad, literally. So in May, we get the Met Gala. And I think this is like probably Taylor's best Met Gala look. She pregames with Karlie and we see pictures of them getting ready together. Taylor applies a red lip, posts an Instagram of that. And she wears this like beautiful Oscar de la Renta baby pink dress. It's very whimsical. It's glittery. It's big. It has this giant ass bow on the back. She looks angelic. She's got good hair. And she posts a very whimsical video of her and Selena Gomez running through the Met Gala in their gowns, signaling to us that they were in fact, you know, on speaking terms. And the theme this year was beyond fashion. I'm not sure that her outfit kind of went beyond fashion. I would just say that it stayed within fashion, but it was really pretty.
Yeah, I also think that she was like listed as like best dress that year.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she wasn't really on theme. I mean, honestly, I'm not going to pretend to be somebody that's like a connoisseur of the Met Gala themes and fashion. But I will say that, I don't know, she's never really blown the theme out of the water.
No. She plays it safe. The
range.
She plays it safe, or she goes too crazy.
I wish she would have gone to that one the year where they did like, I don't remember what it was called, but it was the one where religion was like the theme.
Like the Catholic imagination one. Yeah, she would have looked really cool.
Oh my gosh, she would have looked really good at that one. Fucking everybody else looked really fucking good.
Well, I think that was the year of the cancellation, unfortunately. So
yes, it certainly was, wasn't it? Yep. Can't attend. I'm canceled.
Taken off the guest list. But yeah, I think that this was a win for her. She also barely ever made the best dress list, like literally never. So when she did, I feel like that really, you know, put a bit of wind behind her sails.
Oh yeah, she was like, fuck.
She also goes to the gym a lot at this time. We get lots of yoga pants and little sports bra moments with Karlie Kloss, new candids every day, as we mentioned. And on the 13th of May, Taylor posts a tribute to her new very best friend, Lena Dunham, a particular icon of hers who wrote the show Girls. And I think it's very clear why Taylor would like that show. They became very good friends as Taylor works with Jack Antonoff, her then boyfriend. And as we all know, Lena teaches Taylor about feminism. So if you got an issue with the way that Taylor handles social justice things in this world, blame Lena Dunham.
I direct you to the office of Miss Lena Dunham. You take your ass right down there.
You sit outside, wait for an appointment.
To this day, you can see the after effects of this being her
spiritual awakening.
A spiritual awakening of sorts. And it's so strange because I feel like everybody kind of has like a certain moment in their life or a story or a book or a piece of media of some kind that was like, whoa.
And Taylor's was Lena Dunham.
And Taylor's was encountering Lena Dunham. And I don't, that says enough in and of itself. At the time, I will say, because before this, Taylor had said approximately 0% of anything political about anything ever.
Also had made perhaps some dubious comments about not liking feminism, I think.
Yeah, very, in the past, like, there was one specific article where, and I can't remember exactly what the fuck she said.
Also, she was on TV was like, and she was like, nobody wants to hear what a young girl has to say about politics, yeah. So I'm just going to shut up. Like, that exactly. Really got reversed. Lena hit her with the Uno reverse card here.
She did. She hit her with the Uno reverse card. And at the time, I don't really remember what my personal, like, up until that point, I don't know where we were at with Lena.
I think, like, we didn't know her that well. No, I heard some things about her. I liked the show Girls, to be honest. I did like that show.
I'd actually never seen it. What I knew of her was, I knew she was a feminist because, mm-hmm. I was on Tumblr at that
she
time,
let it be known anybody, as well.
She let it be known. So I was like, oh, cool. Taylor is going to be a feminist. This is great.
I think we were just happy that there was some development with that, because I think especially on Tumblr for the last year or so at that time, the conversation had really like kind of shifted towards that kind of like first wave feminism moment for our generation. And Taylor really hadn't participated or like joined in with that. So I think that we were like happy to see her being interested.
Well, plus this was this whole conversation around her where a lot of people, a lot of feminists really considered her to be the antithesis of feminism, mm-hmm. that she represented virginal, you know, being pure, being a good girl, all these things are things that were at the time seen as being anti-feminist just in and of itself. Mm-hmm. She never did. I mean, she did. I mean, she wrote Better Than Revenge. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
But she was fairly innocuous, but that was also like something that was not looked on, you know, particularly fondly, because she did kind of shed that image kind of being like, I'm not like other sluts. I'm, you know what I mean? Like, it was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was there. I mean, watch her reaction to Miley Cyrus's VMA performance. I think you
can tell me that she thinks that she's better than her in that moment, because I can see it. She does.
So this is the month where the rompers and the two-piece sets with the little midriff showing really start to become a trend. This is, I'd say, probably her most iconic sartorial choice and maybe my favorite too, because I just felt like it was hard for her to fuck up a matching two-piece set, you know? All she needed to do was pick a nice bag and a good pair of shoes to go with the little set, and it was a serve. And what did she do this entire month? Served us.
Served us.
And there are very iconic images of her with bubble machines on a stoop in New York City. She's doing her full Sarah Jessica Parker, like, I am the main character, here I go. Yeah.
Here and I go, baby.
Around this time, she does an interview with E! And they're asking her about her style. She says that her style guru, the person who influences her clothing, is Lena Dunham. This really confused me.
Ladies, everybody do yourself a favor and Google Lena Dunham outfit, and you take a look at those images and you tell me.
You show me where she influenced Taylor.
Even remotely true.
I think she was just obsessed with her at this time.
Exactly, because get into it. They got completely different body types. Lena Dunham is short. Taylor's tall. They can't wear the same fucking clothes.
Not gonna happen.
What are we talking about here?
Just physically, it's not possible.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I think she does this where she like likes someone so much, she love bombs them profusely for like a couple months, and then we never hear from them again.
Torture. Yeah, because when was the last time any of you people heard the name Lena Dunham come out of Taylor Swift's mouth? Never.
Not in the last 5 years, that's for sure.
Yep.
And then this is the moment. This is the moment where she logs onto Instagram and starts stalking her fans. Now, I don't know how to express this to all of you, but this had quite literally never been done before. She never liked to tweet. She never went on Instagram and like found other people's shit. Like, she really was not, she loved her fans, but it kind of went to Tea Party and Club Red, and that was that. This was a whole new world, a world that was full of hope and promise at the beginning and ended up like the fucking Hunger Games. So this was the nice, you know, the egalitarian start of it. It's the first time she interacts with us this kind of way. And I would just like to say that she liked one of my pictures on Instagram.
I completely forgot about that. Yep, I forgot that she started before, ladies, there was Tumblr. Mm-hmm. There was Instagram, mm-hmm. and the Instagram Swifties were getting everything.
All day long, comments, likes, everything.
Yep. Amazing.
I remember. All you had to do was like delete your picture and post it a million times with the hashtag Taylor Swift until she saw it. Like, it really wasn't that hard.
Because back then there wasn't a lot of competition.
Nope. It was just the weirdos. Us weirdos.
Yeah. And I didn't even try, because I didn't have an Instagram back then, especially not like a stan Instagram. So I was just quietly jealous and I didn't even bother.
I made one specifically for the purpose of getting a like from Taylor. Very enterprising. This is a theme you'll see in the 1989 era. I was an enterprising Swiftie. Yeah. So the end of May, she flies to Japan to begin the very last leg of the Red Tour. And you know what was so weird about this leg of the Red Tour is that she had her fucking 1989 hair. Like, it was so weird seeing her do the whole red set, like wear the fucking We Are Never jacket while she had her 1989 hair. It was such a
bastardization. The bastardization. It really was. It was the same thing when she had the fucking beginnings of the red hair at the end of the Speak Now tour. It's like, no.
It's like, can't you wait until you're officially done, just for the narrative's sake? Can't you
fucking wait for the narrative's sake, Miss Main Character?
In June, she finishes off the red tour. And let me say that because I witnessed it, it was a Walmart version of the original production. We had no rotating stage, no flying cages. She cut Begin Again. Everything has changed. Treacherous. And the 60s version of You Belong With Me.
No way did she cut fucking Treacherous and You Belong With Me, bitch.
She changed You Belong With Me to a guitar moment. So she did like an acoustic version of it, but it wasn't the adorable, amazing 60s version that I was like gagging to see.
Didn't you go to like a low budget Speak Now tour too?
Yep. yep, I did. Yep. She literally brings like a fucking bucket and her guitar, and she sits down in the middle of the square in whatever country she's in. She's like, hello, $100 million for a ticket, please.
Yeah. And people paid, baby.
And we paid, and we sat there and we listened to her slam that bucket. But in China, there is a picture of her with a huge bug in her hair. And that went viral for a hot sec. That was really scary. She was like serving face and there's this huge bug just like in her hair. Google it. I think she Instagrammed it actually.
Hello? I think she did. I think she did. Like, she got a kick out of it, I think. Which, good for her, because if it was me, I would have been setting my hair on fire.
So now I'm going to tell my story about, you know, all my things that happened. So I managed to get a front row ticket to see her on the first night in Singapore. She announced her Singapore date. And then I was like, oh, I had two computers. I was trying to get a good seat. And I got a ticket. I tried to get floor seats and I got like 26th row. And I was so depressed. And then I went on a wait list because they were like, okay, well, if you didn't get tickets, go on the wait list. And I did get tickets, but I went on the wait list anyway. She ends up canceling the Jakarta show that was supposed to happen earlier in the week. And instead of, you know, just like leaving it a blank date, they add an additional Singapore date. And because I was on the wait list, I got first priority to pick my seats. So I got front fucking row floor. Like literally
Enterprise.
Right at Enterprise. The end at the end of the catwalk. To be fair, I was like on the left side, but you know what, it was fucking front row, baby. Yeah, it's
fucking front row, baby.
And I was like, that. I'm gonna get that holy ground hat. I didn't, but I was really convinced I was gonna get it. So I was excited. I was on a mission to meet her, so I got the red tour circuit jacket made at a tailor. I also had neon lights and a sign with holy ground lyrics. And, you know, she saw me, I will say. On the first night, she saw me. She came over during We Are Never. She looked right at me. She was dancing. We were vibing. I was crying. It was amazing. So I was also involved in, like, some fledgling, like, stan Twitter thing. And the sponsor of the tour offered us one meet and greet pass. And in the group chat, there were, like, six Swifties in it. And one guy who was, like, the ringleader was like, okay, I'm not going to take it because I'm so dedicated to the mission of like being a stan account. I was like, fine, whatever. What? So he asked us all to write a paragraph about why we deserved to get the meet and greet. Like, we were all fighting each other for it, basically. So I was like,
well, I mean,
okay,
come on. Yeah,
here I go. I pulled out every fucking bad thing that has ever happened to me in my life. And I wrote it all down and I wrapped it up with, this will all be solved if I meet Taylor. So they had no choice but to give me the meet and greet. Unless they look like absolute assholes. Yep, they gave it to me.
Yep. Enterprise, baby.
Enterprising. So I met her on the last night, pre-show meet and greet. It was actually a very scary experience. I was like not prepared for the talking to that I was going to get by her security guard before I went in. And you know, you're a little shook before meeting her anyway. So someone kind of yelling at you before you go in doesn't feel very good.
But I don't think I've ever heard you mention this part of the story. He yelled at you?
Yeah,
what was actually said? He was just like,
so basically like when you go in, you have to give your camera or your phone to like the person who's taking the picture. And so I had a camera and my phone and I gave it to them and they were like, okay, you need to turn your phone off. But I had put my voice notes on because I wanted to record our conversation. And the security guard saw that I did that. And he was like, I'm going to give you like 5 seconds to turn off your phone or you're not going to meet her. And I'm literally standing like behind the curtain looking at her meet someone else. And I was like, oh my God, okay. So I just like handed him my phone and he like deleted the recording and kept it from me until I left the room.
Whoa.
Yeah, fucking around with that shit. They are not playing.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. That's intense. Whoa, I would have been shook. The way that always trying to skirt around the fucking girls. You get yelled at by the security guard in Singapore. You get yelled at by her bodyguard in New York. But you keep going
it's
back.
It's true. I'm on the list. That's the thing. Yeah. If there's a list, I'm on it. I'm not sure if I'm on the blacklist or I'm on the good list. I think it's the blacklist at this point. So after that talking to, I entered the room and I cried all over her, cried on her shoulder, told her many things. She held my hand. She was very sweet. I like left some snot on her dress, like literally like a wet patch on her dress where she hugged me. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And she was like, oh, that's okay. I don't even like this dress anyway, which was just such a like nice, sweet thing to say in the moment. Cause I was like completely freaked and overwhelmed. And then we took our picture. I look like a feral cat. I really was just so.
No, you're so fucking overwhelmed. No, your Loft 89 picture is so much better than your Red Pill picture. It's true. It's too true to say. It's literally the best one.
I was just not ready. I was so scared when it happened. But either way, it was very nice. So then she took my song request for the secret song because it was the very, very, very last show of the tour. I asked her to play Long Live because I'm a good Swiftie and I like to keep up with our fucking traditions. And she said yes. So she did Long Live. Andrea came and sat with us and she gave me a hug. Really nice. Literally that night, though, on Instagram, she posts a handwritten note with the caption, just so you know, there are far, far greater things ahead than anything else we leave behind. Wow. Wow.
What does it all mean?
What does it all mean? I mean, we knew something was on the fucking horizon at this point.
Right before 1989 officially came out, man, we didn't know what we were in for. We really didn't.
We had no fucking clue.
No fucking clue.
So later in that month, Taylor purchases a brand new cat to betray Meredith, and she calls her Olivia Benson Swift. She posts a really cute picture of her on Instagram. You know the one where she's like holding her and she's in a cute two-piece crochet set?
It's like pink. I recall.
I love it.
Yeah, and so cute.
Olivia is like a very beautiful cat too, like beautiful eyes. Great eyes, beautiful eyes.
Great eyes, beautiful eyes, indeed.
But yeah, unfortunately, this does set the precedent that Meredith is like absolutely rebuffed as the go-to Taylor Swift cat, which upsets me. But you know what? She's mysterious.
She is, and that kind of makes her the better cat. Honestly, I'm fucking sick of seeing that fucking Benjamin cat.
The rest of this month is quiet, and I presume this is because, you know, we are doing a lot of behind-the-scenes action. Then we get to our favorite month of the year and you can all guess what happens. It's July. So where the fuck else would she be other than in Watch Hill, Rhode Island for her 4th of July bonanza? Vanessa from Gossip Girl attends this one.
Who is Vanessa from Gossip Girl? Because I was reading that and I was like, who the fuck is that?
I actually don't know her name, but she was around for a while. She was part of the squad. I think she might've been in the 22 music video.
Vanessa from Gossip Girl. Like, her name is Vanessa in the show?
Yes. I don't know her real name.
That is. I don't care to know. Yeah, we don't care.
Her other absolute icons and role models, Lena Dunham and Emma Stone, are there. Honestly, I think she made her 1989 personality a combination of those two people.
That makes a lot of sense because, yeah. Yep.
Her foot soldier, Jamie King, is there. She obviously bakes and has the first slip and slide, and you know, at this time I really wanted to fucking go to this party so bad.
It was like a big point of like jealousy, which is funny because nobody got to go except for other celebrities, but it's like, well, now why the fuck?
I mean, you have secret sessions. Why can't I just go to this?
Why can't I just go to this fucking thing? Because it looked like so much fun. You know, they're doing the sparklers, they're dancing. The pictures of her. Okay, do you remember the pictures of her? I can't remember if this was this 4th of July or the next one, but she's got a water gun and she's walking around her Watch Hill property with a fucking water gun.
Yeah, just by herself. I love that picture. I love
like defending her fucking property as the fucking like bounty or whatever it was, the water slide was getting put up, just meandering around, water gun in hand.
Trespassers will be shot.
Yep.
So she does her, you know, her 4th of July amazing time. Then she continues to hang out with Karlie Kloss, fucking surprise, surprise. And at this point, now we're starting to get into the business casual robot. So she pulls her catalog from Spotify and she pens an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, which basically sets her up for a very sanctimonious season of preaching and wielding her industry power. She says, music is art. Art is rare and valuable and should not be free. Scott Borchetta fully supports her decision and comes up with the horrible tagline, music has value.
And he releases a line of merch.
And you know and what? At the time, we're all over the TL going, music has value. Music has value.
We were her fucking soldiers.
Yep. We were she brainwashed.
She could say no wrong. She could do no wrong. Mm-mm. I remember this was like a really big like anti-leaks movement because obviously music has value. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you cannot under any circumstances listen to the leak because
absolutely
then,
not. Then music then, doesn't have value.
Because then you're taking the value away from the music. And I mean, this was like the catchphrase. Like, I mean, if you were a fucking, and I'm going to use this term, I feel like it's completely fallen out of practice. But back in the day, this was what we said. A fucking cupcake Swiftie who just everything Taylor said was the word of God. If mm-hmm. she said it, that means that that's how it is. Anything that would possibly upset her, no matter how asinine, I'm going to come for you on a personal fucking
You moment. Will die.
Yeah, you will be sorry that you said or did that thing. I don't think I was ever quite that bad, but,
No, but at the time we definitely were drinking the Kool-Aid as well. Cause like, this was all coming out of nowhere. There was no precedent for this. Like she hadn't really like come out and like done business stuff in public before. So I think it was like a little behind the scenes peek at like what kind of power she has in the industry. And we were all kind of like, hell yeah.
Look at the queen go. Look at her fucking
look
go.
At this capitalism, bitch slaying.
We love capitalism.
Yes, please. Give Taylor Swift more money. She needs it. Yeah,
she needs more money. And of course, I mean, she kind of like ran underneath, you know, I'm not going to say the guys, because I do think that she kind of does care about smaller artists, but I mean that was kind of the big thing she was always talking about, you know, like smaller artists, smaller artists, smaller
she
artists.
Does but care mean, like, but it's like me first, smaller artists second.
Well, she's the one who pulled her fucking entire catalog from Spotify. Mm-hmm. her catalog. She was the one who says no, you poors don't get to listen to my music.
Off up $15 I mean, and we can talk.
Yes. And then we can talk about you listening to my tunes, baby.
Well, also, I mean, I guess at this point, streaming wasn't so huge. So it didn't really like, I don't think it made such an impact on her commercial success. Like she couldn't do that now because streaming is like pretty much the only way to release music.
And it's so true. I mean, back then, if you were half the time, if you were listening to like Taylor Swift music and you didn't buy the physical album, you were probably listening to it illegally. Mm-hmm. Like because you couldn't fucking stream it, could you? And Apple Music, I'm pretty sure did not exist.
Not yet. Oh, she had something to say later in the year though when it did,
she did.
Come to exist.
She did. She piped up. Did. She fucking piped up.
Around this time, interestingly, Project Cardinal is undertaken. And Project Cardinal was the Taylor Nation code word for the video shoot for Shake It Off. Taylor Nation scours the net for fans, and one fan posted her invite on Twitter and got uninvited for posting it. This is the beginning of the fandom as we know it now.
Dumbass do you have to be? Like, really, you can't keep the secret? Really? You've got, I mean, are you dumb?
Is it worth it to share? No. It's like, meet Taylor or tell everyone that you're gonna meet Taylor and don't get to meet her. Like, are you stupid?
I really want to know who that was and the devastation that occurred after.
But this was an interesting kind of, you know, this is where the elitism of the fans, the favorites, the chosen ones starts to kind of emerge from the shadows.
Yeah, and you know, every time I think about it, I'm like, well, you know, all Taylor really was trying to do was A, get some press, and B, be nice. And like, of course, us as gremlins have to fucking ruin
everything.
Because she didn't intend for any of the bad stuff to happen. It just did because that's how she's human too, beings are.
Also, she's too big. It's not really possible to do that without somebody getting upset. She can't meet fucking everyone.
Exactly. And I feel like nobody really understands that. I mean, I didn't at the time. I cried my eyes out. I was upset as fuck. But, you know, you grow up, you get older, you say, mm-hmm. I mean, does it really fucking matter?
Yeah,
does
it's
it really
okay.
fucking matter? Yeah.
So but. In August, we get to August. This is, you know, this is where it all starts to really kick off. On the 4th of August, she posts a picture of her pressing the 18th floor on an elevator. And the caption is, this is the first clue. She posts, you know, a few other clues over the next week, which leads us to believe that on the 18th of August at 5 p.m., there's going to be a fucking live stream. And you know what, bitches? We all know what a live stream means. A live stream means there's new fucking music coming out.
And we were fucking ready. I was pumped up because all this time we're hearing about she's working with so-and-so. There was an article that came out. She's working with Diane Warren, who is like a huge pop writer. And we were like, what the fuck is she doing? What's she up to? She's dancing. She's at the dance studio. What's she doing? What's all this top secret stuff? So we were already whipped up even before we knew there was going to be a
live
stream.
We were whipped into shape and ready. And I remember our theories. We started to come up with theories at this time. And two theories that I remember being like the ones people were really clinging on to was that we got a promotional picture of Taylor wearing sunglasses sitting like in front of the New York City skyline. So of course, everyone was like, skyline, TS5, skyline, that's what it is.
Skyline.
And then the other one was black and white. Do you remember that? That was the other theory, that it was going to be called Black and White. Why the fuck would anybody name an album that?
One of the very first pictures that we got right around this time that was like an official looking photo shoot picture was her in a black and white outfit. I remember this so clearly.
God, and we were so stupid.
We're fucking idiots. Absolutely.
And we
fools.
thought the musical direction of this album was going to be Holy Ground, State of Grace. Like, I remember very specifically, those were the two songs that we were like, okay, it's going to be kind of like a pop rock album, lots of live instruments, like guitars, drums. Okay, fucking dumbasses, you were wrong.
Yeah, completely and totally wrong. I remember that too. I was like, here we go, finally. An album for the rest of us.
Here it comes.
It couldn't have been more wrong.
In the midst of all of this, The Giver comes out. And in the show notes I've written, who fucking cares? Who cares? Literally, who
cares?
Waste
of my time. I paid money to see that piece of shit movie.
Oh, you
want to
see it in the theater?
I went to see it in the theater. Oh, I went to the theater and I paid my money and I sat there with my brother. And I watched this piece of horse shit film.
And she's in it for like a minute, right? She's really not in it very
long.
She's in
it for 5 seconds. She's like,
wearing her wildest dreams wig.
Yeah, no, flash forward to me, you know, some 5-6 years later, you couldn't. I still have not seen Cats. I will not see Cats.
Oh,
I have no interest in seeing Cats.
You shouldn't. I was going to say that The Giver is where the acting career should have stopped. Like, that should have been it. Like, give it up. No more.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't understand why she keeps pushing it so much. I mean, at this point, she's been in more movies than Miley Cyrus.
Okay, so before we get into the live chat, Madeline, let's talk about when the Shake It Off lyrics leaked.
Okay.
All right. So basically, what happened was some radio guy who got a preview of the song, who's probably dead now, got a preview of the song, and he said that he gave like three clues. The first was that there were horns. So we had that information. Then it was the chorus. He said something like the first verse is about going on too many dates. And the third thing was players gonna play. Take it away, Madeline.
Okay, I'm taking the mic. And I think another part of this, I'm not 100% positive. I know that happened, but I feel like I had somehow, gotten my little grubby fingers on the entire chorus. And I knew players gonna play, haters gonna hate. I'm just gonna shake. I mean, can you imagine?
Out of context, guys, please just remember that like we had no clue what was coming and that is all we had.
Out of context, this was, in a word, horrifying. I can't even begin to tell you. It's like all this information is coming at you. It's gonna be a pop record. She's just repeating words again and again. These are the lyrics. She is known to be a quote unquote master lyricist. And this is what she's serving us. I couldn't have been
more
upset if she had come to my house and punched me in the face. Like, I'm serious. I was upset about it. I actually, I and I couldn't speak on it because the information that I had was like under wraps.
You had more than I had. I only knew the player's gonna play. You had the full fucking chorus.
I had information. I don't remember how. I would just receive information sometimes.
Yeah,
and
people used to send you tips like you were a fucking gossip blog.
I was, and that's why I'm on the fucking blacklist. But so I couldn't speak on it. So I took to my webcam in private in my bedroom and I recorded it. And it was something to the effect of, if you're watching this,
I am if you're watching dead. This,
it means that a horror has befallen the fandom. Terrible song has come out. I was like upset, like praying. Oh, it's so good. It's literally fucking hilarious because I have it juxtaposed alongside my live stream reaction.
Where you're really trying to like make yourself be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But to sum up, it was
a catastrophe.
Complete catastrophe. You can't even begin to imagine it.
So Madeline knew the whole chorus of the song. I knew the player's gonna play part. The live chat rolls around. Okay, it's 5 a.m. in Singapore. I wake myself up, get out of bed. It's the first day of school for me, first day of 12th grade. I wake up really early in a panic to listen to this. And right as the album, like right as the live chat is going to start, fucking Bo is a Swiftie who's like famous for shitposting, trolling. And he's much better now. But back in the day, it was like, assault on all fronts all the time.
No.
Literally, I'm refreshing. He loved it. I was refreshing the dash. I was ready to go on the live chat. Basically, what happened was, I think as soon as they started the live chat, they put 1989 up for pre-order. So keep in mind, I had no idea what the album was called. I refresh my blog before the live chat starts and it says Taylor Swift 1989 coming out, pre-order it now. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? 5 minutes before, are you fucking kidding me?
I feel like I also saw the album cover too.
Yes, it had the album cover. It was like the link to the pre-order with the little tiny icon of the 1989 cover. I was so pissed.
What was really magical about that moment is that it happened so fast and so soon before the live stream that there was like maybe a millisecond of people being absolutely irate. And then there wasn't even any time to really linger on it because the live stream was starting.
And then everyone was so
excited.
So
it's like, in a way, he like got away with it.
Yeah, Bo for sure, yeah. If you're listening. Yeah. Fucking legendary.
Yeah, it was legendary because I saw it. Like, I saw the leak or whatever you want to call it. And I was like, huh. Hmm. And then I had to move my eyes away. Look at the live stream. At first, I was like, it's not called 1989. That's a fucking idiotic album title.
And then...
history was made.
So basically, the live chat starts. She's standing on the fucking top of the Empire State Building, like the dramatic bitch that she is, saying, welcome to New York, like she built the city by hand. And that was a clue in and of itself. And then she comes the fuck into this like cute room. It looks like it's modeled after her New York apartment. There are a bunch of fans gathered who I was so fucking jealous of at the time. And this live stream was like a production. You know, the red one was a step up production wise, but like the 1989 live stream, it was in different areas. There were like 10 cameras, the fucking fans Skyping in from like Brazil. It was really insane. And she said she had 3 surprises. And the first surprise was Shake It Off. And she kind of cavorts through the crowd and dances to Shake It Off. Do you remember what your feelings were when you heard it playing in real time?
No, not really. I mean, I do kind of remember that I'm kind of, you know.
I remember I couldn't hear like, it that well.
Yeah, and then I couldn't find it on, like, because I couldn't stream it, could I? Because there's no Apple Music, and she took her shit off Spotify. So I was trying to buy it on Apple, you know, iTunes, it was called in the day.
Back in the day.
And you know how long it takes for iTunes songs to be uploaded?
A million years.
For fucking ever. So I'm trying to refresh. This is also in the video, which I will post. So I couldn't even really listen to it for a good 20-30 minutes. So then when I did finally hear it, I remember I was kind of like, I mean, it's fun. but like, what does this tell me about the album as a whole? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, is this what it's gonna sound like? Is this what it's all gonna be like? Just her fucking saying shit again and again.
She like, was doing the flailing limb thing as well, like dancing with the fans. It was like, look at my legs, look at my very long spindly arms dancing to this song that I love. And I feel like all of the fans there looked as though they'd been smacked in the face as well. Like they were very, I think we were all a bit shook when we heard like the sound, like when the horns came in, we were like, whoa, what is this? It was so different.
Yeah, it was definitely a big what the fuck moment, because I mean,
and she moved on from it so fast. That's the thing. She was like, okay, song's out, I have two more surprises for you. And we were like, okay. Yeah. So then she announces that she was going to make her first pop album, and she's very clear that this is a pop album. She says that it's called 1989. She releases the cover, and the words sonically cohesive come up, and I never want to fucking hear those two words together ever again, because it has plagued me from the day that I first heard it.
Yeah, no, that's all anybody could fucking talk about in 1989. Sonically cohesive. Sonically cohesive.
It was like her biggest achievement that the album sounded like good in one go. Isn't that the main goal of an album?
Isn't that what Fearless sounded like? Like, mm-hmm. I don't get it.
The only album that doesn't do that is like Red, I guess.
This whole thing, and this goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning with the Grammys, being mm-hmm. a cyborg, being hardwired.
Yep. This is the antithesis of Red.
Exactly. That's her whole spiel. Like, this isn't like Red. Mm-hmm. It's better than Red. Like, it's just her whole mentality. Like, laying every time she makes a new album, it's got to be better. It's got to be better. It's got to be better. It's like, well, fuck, man.
Why can't it be good?
Yeah, why can't it just be good? But anyway, I mean, obviously, 1989... isn't a class of its own. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was sonically cohesive. I give her that.
Didn't get a lot of information about what the album was going to be, but she said that she was listening to a lot of late 80s pop, and that was her inspiration. It was a time of limitless potential, and the idea that you can do what you want and be who you want inspired her. Bold chances and rebellion were the words that she used.
That's really funny.
How did I feel about that when I heard it? I think it was the shot heard around the world.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to think about that. Like, inspired by 80s pop is like, it's hard to conceptualize because obviously it's not going to be an 80s song. Mm-mm. It's just going to be it. So it's like, like, it couldn't really wrap my brain around it. Especially because Shake It Off didn't found like a fucking 80s anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you give us one song, then you tell us your inspiration, and like the two don't add up. Okay, girl.
Okay, girl. Especially like Rebellion. It's like,
yeah, 1989 is not an album of Rebellion. Yeah, I mean, no. Reputation, she said, we're talking about Rebellion.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and even then, I mean,
she's not a rebel.
No, she's not. She's not regular. In her nature. She's, no, and she knows it.
Which is why she has to keep telling us that she's a rebel.
Yeah.
So she announces that it's going to be in stores on October 27th, which was my birthday. And she introduces the voice notes to prove that she's a songwriter. And you know what? The final fucking surprise was the video. And I have to say, my jaw was on the fucking floor throughout the video. It was just so different, like so radically different to any video she'd ever done before. It was very stylized. It was like super big budget, like clean. The fucking cheerleader moment, I was like, what is going on? I thought you hated the cheerleaders. Now you are one of them. I mean, I guess that's how you can describe the entire era.
Yeah. Is it pretty much? I can't really remember what I thought about the video. I definitely remember liking the cheerleader part because it was cute.
Yeah, she just looked great.
Hated the part with the twerking, hated it. Hated it, thought it was so embarrassing, and that was even before I could have registered that it was problematic. I just thought
it just looked embarrassing.
Yeah. I liked the finger dancing thing.
I didn't like the ballerina stuff either, because I really hate when her hair is pulled back like that.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for her, really. No, it makes her look like a ghost.
And it makes her look old. It like stretches her skin. It's not a good vibe.
I do remember hating the part with the fans. And not just because of jealousy. Like, I went to this place in my head where I was like, okay, if I got to meet Taylor Swift and I had to dance on camera and then it was going to be shown to people, I would have said, Taylor, I respectfully say that I will not do that. Not for you, not for anybody.
I will watch from the sidelines.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. Not even for clout. Of course, all those fucking schmoes.
Oh, throwing themselves around.
Oh, yeah. Just embarrassing. So embarrassing to me.
And Alexander Goldschmidt was in this.
And he is an enemy of the people and always will be. He's an enemy of the fucking people.
I mean, I guess we're going to leave it there because, and I know it seems like a weird place to leave it because there's like 4 months left in the year. But when I tell you that those 4 months are like 9 years worth of content, like jam-packed, seriously.
Condensed.
Every day, every minute, every hour.
She's getting interviewed. She's saying shit. Everything she says.
She's performing. She's doing a new song.
She's doing this. She's shaking her ass. She's got her crop top on. iHeartRadio.
another cat
album. Ed Sheeran, he's there.
It's literally that Lady Gaga meme where it's like plane, bus, car, club, another club. Like, that is Taylor's year. To surmise this part of the year, it was like a big fucking shift in her career, but also in our perception of like what place she held in popular culture.
Definitely, in my mind, it is before 1989 and after 1989. That is where her mm-hmm. career split.
Yep.
Indubitably.
Yes.
1989
changed everything. Like it's hard to like overstate how impactful this was.
Without 1989, there would be no Reputation. Not to mention no Folklore or Evermore. I genuinely believe that. I mean, so many things were the catalyst, because if 1989 hadn't happened and if she hadn't gotten so big, she never would have mended the fence with Kanye West. I mean, we're getting into like mm-hmm. the butterfly effect here. Yeah. But like, you see what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. everything. 1989 is literally the pinnacle.
This was the album that was gonna like really either catapult her into another level of stardom or would be the beginning of a decline. And obviously we know that it was the former and not the latter, but we must remember that this was a risk of sorts. Like, for sure, she was like renegotiating her entire brand, her entire image. She didn't want to hinge off the good girl thing anymore. She didn't want to be a country artist. She wanted world domination. And I would say that people were not convinced that she could do it, which only propelled her even further. But thank you everybody for tuning in, and we will see you in 2014, part 2 in 2025.